Oh, good afternoon and welcome everybody to the latest Commercial Risk Europe webinar brought to you by us here in the UK. We have over 300 people signed in from Europe and worldwide. So welcome to you all. Thanks for taking the time to join us. So we've got a pretty critical topic that we're discussing here, construction risk, project restart. We've been able to put this discussion on simply because we've gathered a great group of speakers who are prepared to go in some depth on a very important topic. I think, as you're all aware, as we emerge from lockdown across Europe and across the world, there are huge risk implications for the new economy that we're moving into, and just simply the practice of easing out of lockdown and back into full tilt. I want to thank, before we go any further, our sponsors who've enabled us to put on today's webinar, the leading law firm CMS and Zurich. Thanks a lot for their support and to enable us to put this event on. Now, the topic. I'll very briefly introduce before I hand over to Gunther, who's going to kick off with a presentation. COVID-19 has caused a massive change, seismic shifts, you could say, in the construction industry. We've had big issues around workplace safety, project delays, re-establishment of supply chains, of course, which all come into focus as we come towards the end of lockdown. These are all critical risks that need to be looked at very carefully and managed very carefully. Above all, this is going to require a lot of deep, close and positive partnership between the various partners involved in the risk management and risk transfer chain. We've got representatives of all the key elements of that chain with us today. I'll briefly introduce them before handing over to Gunther. We have Joel Applebaum, who is Chief Content Officer of ERMI, the International Risk Management Institute, who appears to be sitting in a cloud, but is actually sitting in Chicago. Thanks for joining us so early in the morning, Joel. Paul Marshall. Hi. Paul Marshall, risk manager with Bechtel, obviously a very large global operation based here in Europe with a lot of construction risks. So Paul is very welcome to join us and share his thoughts. Stephen Tester, partner with CMS, a lot of you who have been to our physical events, which we can't hold anymore at the moment, will of course know because Stephen has joined us on stage a number of times. Thanks for coming today, Stephen. Scott Peachy, CEO of Marsh JLT Construction Practice. Scott's right in the middle of this, in between customers and insurers, and no doubt looking forward to a very busy period ahead of him. And of course, Gunther Schneider, Principal Construction Risk Engineer with Zurich, who's gonna open up the webinar with a 10-minute presentation, primarily focused on loss engineering and loss prevention elements rather than the insurance side, which we'll then move into later during the discussion. So, without further ado, I shall hand over to Gunther.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I hope you can see my screen. As usual, the first question. I'm very pleased to present some initial thoughts on this topic ruling the world since a couple of months, and it looks like it will take another few months to go through that. And as you can imagine, and it was not so easy to condense all that in a 10-minute presentation. So let's start. And if we talk about restart, we cannot avoid to talk about shutdown first, because if there is no shutdown, you wouldn't restart. So the event, I mean, we all know COVID-19 hit the world, and there could be other events causing the same type of problems. It could be financial, political, crisis, strikes, or similar issues. And let's say, always start with a positive point. There was some time to prepare the shutdown, because there are many other events, and we can see them here. So earthquake, natural hazard events, but also explosions, fires, whatever, where we don't have time to prepare a shutdown. And there obviously a huge material damage normally caused through the event. And when it comes to this shutdown following this COVID crisis, as you imagine, and as we all know, it's not so easy just to turn off the light and shut the door and go home and wait until it's over. So for this process, we developed, a guideline to go what you have to do to really successfully shut down a large construction site. And it's not a big surprise that it starts with a thorough risk assessment at the beginning. Then you have some actions to prepare the shutdown. And finally, what it's called here, maintenance or operation during the shutdown. Again, it doesn't mean we have nothing to do on site. So, for example, structural monitoring needs to be done permanently, and these kind of actions. And this scheme, of course, applies if there is some time available to prepare the shutdown. Again, other events, you don't have any time to prepare, and you have to, immediately shut down the place, or it's basically not even your decision to shut it down, and everything should be embedded in the emergency response plan. And no activities are possible. So in an earthquake area, even if your site didn't suffer a loss, of course, you cannot access anymore. And you have to close. Before I continue with a few thoughts, I would go back quickly to have some risk definition thoughts. And you can see at the bottom in the footer where this is coming from and where we adapted for Zurich Risk Engineering. And it simply says we have to obviously have a hazard, we have an exposure, and we have our control measures on site. And all together, if you mix them together, you can define the risk scenarios. But what it means is simply saying the magnitude of an event is not the same as the size of a loss. So a small magnitude event can even cause a large loss. The classic event is a flood event in the desert. It's never raining, but you can have a flood event there. And all these parameters are depending for construction sites on the geographical location, the season, the project and the structural system, and finally the status of project completion. If we adopt that now to our thoughts about the main risks during the shutdown, we have the exposures and associated vulnerabilities on site, such as temporary works, shoring, scaffolds, and the structure as such, which could be partially completed, all the equipment, access roads, etc., etc. When it comes to COVID, and we have to, not to COVID, but when we have to close down the site, we can then create the classical risk scenarios. Very often fire is on top of it. Then you have all the natural hazards going on. And they can cause, for example, a collapse of partially completed structures. We still have groundwater movements, in water ingress, slope instabilities. We can have standstill damages to machinery, like tunnel boring machines. We still can have vandalism. And now COVID comes into the play, health of the personnel. Impact of the shutdown, and we have here three different construction sites. Maybe you recognize them or not, that's not that important. And irrespective, if the activities are totally suspended, like on the left side on the Brenner Base Tunnel in northern Italy, but the southern part of the tunnel. If they are suspended 100%, slowed down, or even not impacted, or almost not impacted, and even the preparation of the shutdown was perfect, and no damages occurred during the shutdown, the main consequence for all of them are delays. And when we look into the into that, and now we come to the restart. And the good thing of the restart is that we for sure have some time to do that, because there is no, let's say, force majeure creating the problem. Again, it starts with the assessment. Here you can see, let's say, the keywords or the key tasks. I don't want to go too much into the details of that. And then the actions to make the place as safe as possible to restart the works. And now what's interesting for us are, of course, the consequences of the delay caused through the shutdown. And then with COVID, we will have additional delays due to the hygiene measures, distancing, mask, when you have to use a mask on a construction site to work, travel restrictions, and all this will cause additional delay. So, and what brings us here to this discussion then is the consequences of these delays to the insurance coverage. And when we have in the assessment that we have to notify all the stakeholders and review the contracts, then the typical points came up, like delay in startup, is that covered or not in the policy? How are the conditions in the policy about idle works or cessation of the works? Then what I really like in our insurance world are non-physical damage coverage wording restrictions, if they are in there or not. Third-party liability can be an aspect. And many others, regardless if they are insured or not, I mean, milestones, penalties, liquidated damages, and so on. When we have to review, or we have to review the program, obviously we have a shutdown period and everything is pushed back. But there are several, or there can be quite critical aspects if you shift the program only for this period without adoption. So for a hydropower plant, there might be that the river diversion works are shifted from the dry season to the wet season. So you have to modify that. I mean, you cannot just go on. Another problem can be an incomplete bridge construction, which you cannot just have like this during hurricane season or other adverse weather conditions. And or you just have another hurricane season to be on active on the construction site. Other topics related with this shutdown is that logistics, supply chain, resource and resources are late, interrupted. You have reduced production capacities. Maybe your suppliers are out of business. And another bunch of problems could be expired warranty limits. And next question is, do you still have the workforce available, key personnel, or then the lack of key personnel? Do you need additional resources to catch up delays, deterioration of installed machinery, yard storage, access roads, availability, and so on? And when it comes to COVID-19, of course, everybody has to follow the rules, like distancing, etc. Normally, this will generate additional costs and installations. We need additional health and safety personnel, probably. We heard in the pre-discussion quickly that maybe the number of incidents went down, although it's not clear if it's because the activities went down or if it's really related to the people is taking more care on site than before. But there are other topics which can be a problem as well, like fatigue of the workforce, overexertion, and even additional stress at home, because the family life routines are impacted by the virus. And there is still an uncertainty for everybody if there is a second wave where the virus comes back and causes the same problems again, or how we can deal with this situation. And last but not least, another question comes up about liability claims. So if a contractor or an employer cannot provide a safe environment to work, if there are liability claims by the employees. And I guess now I produced a lot of keywords about this topic, and it's time to thank you for your attention. And now I hand it over to Adrian, who will moderate and start the discussion.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much, Gunther, and thanks for your time. There's a hell of a lot of information in there. A lot of thinking to do. I believe the slides will be available for everybody afterwards, so they can have a look and try and work through those. Before I introduce the rest of the panel, I'm just going to ask you one question there, which stood out for me at the end: supply chain. What is the main problem with supply chain in this restart situation from your perspective?
Did I take that one, or was that aimed at?
Yeah, it was aimed at Gunther, but you take that, Scott.
Well, no, I didn't. Did Gunther want to go?
No, I don't want to go, but I had to take, I don't know, I didn't realize that he's asking me, but thanks to taking that, Scott. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned supply chain, because we all sat there from at that point, our offices, not yet our living rooms, watching sort of COVID-19 unfold. And the first time an actual issue crossed my desk was a client building a power station in Pakistan, and he had no impact directly on his site, but his steam turbine was sat either in the factory or in the port in China, and he was being told it wasn't going to arrive anytime soon. And obviously that's a critical piece of equipment. It was sitting on the critical path. He asked us the question outright, can I claim for this under my delay in startup insurance? And the fact that his turbine was still sitting in the factory or in the port, unfortunately, in that case, wasn't covered by the policy. Albeit he went back, and we'll probably explore it in more detail in a bit, but we had to refer him to his contract and the relationship between him and his employer, which is where a lot of these delay issues will be dealt with rather than insurance.
Right. Yeah, thanks, Scott. I think that's a topic we are going to definitely dig deeper into later in the conversation. Just point out to everybody listening, there is a Q&A section there, panel. If you want to ask a question, please do as we go. If it's relevant to the topic we're discussing at the time, I will try and introduce it. Otherwise, we'll tackle the questions at the end. So please do use that. Scott, if I backtrack a little bit, from your perspective, what are the key risks presented by lockdown and pandemic for contractors and owners? And what are the risks for those who were able to carry on working? Because I think most projects actually continued in one form or another.
Yeah.
What do you see?
I mean, as I just said, the first risk I saw was supply chain. But if we focused on the human impact, if you like, I think, you know, the first thing to go through the minds of our clients was to protect their employees.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone will be aware in certain legislations, there are regulations that you need to comply with. But I don't think that was in the front of people's minds. I think they were genuinely concerned about protecting their employees. And depending on the type of project, you either carried on nearly as normal, which depended on where you were in the world. And I think the hydro plant, for example, that was in Gunther's slides, which is pretty much in the middle of nowhere, and it was a civil works contract, it carried on as normal. And again, in the UK, most of our road projects carried on as normal. You know, social distancing when you're working on that kind of project and outside isn't such a problem.
Yeah.
When you bring it back to other forms of construction at the lower end, residential housing, and if we take the higher end commercial property in London, where you've got, you know, one lift going up and down, people had to take stock. And depending on which country you were in, the government either gave you very clear advice or it didn't. Now, as it turned out in the UK for a while, the advice was a bit sketchy. At no point were people told you have to shut down. But they did. Now, we sort of formed a working group very early on in the process. We came to the conclusion that the third party liability risk was probably moderate to low. We weren't too concerned about that. Whilst I'm aware that certain countries, there are lawsuits where they're trying to claim there was a physical damage exposure.
Yeah.
For me, I think that's going to be a tough sell to the market, but we'll see how some of those claims develop. So we were really focused on the employees in that first instance and what might happen to the timescales. But the first thing that actually sprung to mind for me was, are you going to vitiate or breach a policy condition if you just shut the site down? And we had a look at a number of policies, and some construction wordings, particularly annual wordings, there are no conditions relating to cessation of works. Then when you move more into the project space, and particularly when you move to insurer forms of wording rather than broker forms, there are some quite tight conditions where you have to notify the insurers if you're going to shut the site down. Yeah. So the first thing we did was issue a guidance note to our clients, whether they're ours or somebody else's, and say, please check your policy. And if there is a requirement to notify the insurers that you're going to stop work, then do it straight away. The insurers on the other side were worried about many of the risks that Gunther's mentioned, the risks associated with shutting a site down. I wasn't too concerned about that. I think most of our contractors, you know, we've got Paul here from Bechtel, these guys know how to shut down a site, and they didn't have to do it overnight. So that for me wasn't a big concern.
Right. Thank you very much, Scott. We've got a couple of questions flown in there. I'm going to analyze them first and then see whether we can drop them in the conversation now. But before we do that, I'll just move on to you, Stephen. From your perspective, what are the main losses incurred that you've seen? What caused them, and what are the insured events? And do you expect a raft of lawsuits as owners and contractors seek redress before we go on to the delay and startup implications?
Well, the insurance market is exposed in a number of different possible ways to the direct and indirect consequences of COVID. If you are looking at the cover for a construction site, for example, if a site is locked down and there's inadequate security put in place, there is a risk of the theft of materials from the site. And where there are sites which are continuing to operate, you have the risk that comes from people having to work in a new world, the COVID world, together with each other and respecting social distancing rules. One interesting piece of information that I was given before this call was that actually one of the risk managers, one of the major contractors, has been finding that on open sites, the incidence of health and safety incidents has been dropping. It's not entirely clear why that might be. It may simply be that the individuals are more distant from each other and are not tripping over each other effectively. Or it could just be an enhanced level of care in sites because of the realization that we're in a crisis situation. It may also be the result of employers recognizing that at the moment there is a crisis which is not of anybody's making and are putting less pressure on the parties to live up to contractual programs, etc. And that's having a desirable effect on working. So that's one aspect in which the current COVID crisis may actually be positive in terms of claims volume. In terms of claims being brought between members of the construction team, one possible area that has been identified are professional indemnity related claims. The trend at the moment appears to be that there isn't a large increase in professional indemnity claims in the light of COVID, and in one sense you wouldn't expect there to be. There is the prospect that if proper measures have not been put in place and if professionals have been consulted on what measures should be put in place and how they should be applied, that you'll get claims arising out of the fact that they're inadequate. But at the moment, we're not looking at a large surge in professional indemnity-related claims. There are a lot of insured, as Scott identified, who've been looking at their policies to see whether there is some form of cover in place. But because, generally speaking, you would not expect a material damage policy to respond to this, in many cases, they do not respond. There are some policies and some covers which in the soft market have included communicable diseases and pandemic covers. And then subject to the requirements of those endorsements being met, they can give rise to claims, but the trend has been for the limits on those to be set quite low, between 250,000 and a million. So it's not like to provide a huge amount of assistance to the insured, and it is very important that the policy conditions are complied with. So, for example, that there should have been a government order in certain circumstances, which, as we know, there has not been in the UK. That deals really with the loss incidences.
Yeah.
Does that deal with your question?
Yeah, it does. I was thinking also, I mean, obviously a key area, and Scott referred to this earlier as well, is delay and startup implications. And then from that, how the risk is allocated. Perhaps you could have a quick look at that element of the question and then maybe open it up to the rest of the panel.
Sure. I mean, if you've got a delay in startup incident, incident which is threatening to cause delay, which predates the coronavirus pandemic, you have the prospect of any delay to the contract program, which is the result of that preceding event and the COVID-related losses overlapping with each other, and that can complicate the process of calculating the DSU loss. So that's one potential issue. It is also quite important that when one gets past the point where you think that you can restart in full, that you revisit your contractual programs and look at whether you need to adjust your scheduled date of commencement of operation under your DSU policies. And then there's a final point, which is if your reaction to the overall crisis is that you are accelerating your programs, so you're squeezing up your activities in the last few months of the original contractual program, is also important in my view that you should be mentioning that to the insurers, because that might have an impact on the risks that they're writing.
Yeah. Scott, do you have a perspective on that DSU question?
Yes and no. And in part, I'm going to introduce the question that was asked on the Q&A, because I think it was related to a similar topic.
It is, yeah.
I think it's fair to say it would be unusual for a policy to cover with full limits. As Stephen said, where we've found extensions of cover for non-damage delay or non-damage business interruption in the property market, they've tended not to be full value covers. There are so many different issues that could cloud the easy adjustment of a DSU claim. And I think this was one of the points that was touched on in the question. You've got situations where the employer is saying, we want you to come back to work. But in some jurisdictions, the employees have gone home and they're not yet ready to come back. Mm. And you only need one supplier to go bust. And I think to Gunther's point, that's a risk that we've not really seen come through yet in terms of subcontractor insolvency, supplier insolvency. But when it comes down to pure delay and startup claims, I'm not expecting many to come through. I mean, in the UK, and I don't want to keep bringing this back to the UK, but people will know there is a court case ongoing between the UK regulator and the insurers. And that will hopefully speed up the discussion, which will allow some of these conditions to be adjusted. But I would say, aside from things like event cancellation, when most of these extensions were designed in policies, they weren't designed for something on this scale and of this nature.
No.
And that's why there's going to be a lot of debate. I mean, even one insurer last week said, well, it was never our intention. Well, it doesn't matter what your intention was, it's a contract. It matters what the contract says.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, who really picks up the cost of delay, I think this is where, you know, the contract is going to be king. And I know of one example of the same entity in Asia who completely demobilized and gave his employer the bill because that's what the contract allowed. And on the site down the road, where they got no such recovery, they've virtually carried on at 80% output. So everybody, I expect, has gone to look at those contracts first before, you know, insurance is there, but I think that contractual relationship is going to be key. And one last point to mention, if you're an employer and you've got a single turnkey contract with one entity, that's a much easier discussion than when you've got a civil works contractor, an M&E contractor. You know, if you've got multiple contracts on site, you might have one contractor who wasn't even due on site yet, and he's claiming for delays because contractor A couldn't finish his works. So you know, it could get very messy.
It could well do. Could well do. Paul, can I introduce you into the conversation, please? So what complications and issues are involved with cessation of activities from the risk manager's perspective? And how covered will it be in future? And what does the risk manager need to do to ensure that's in place?
There's a good few questions there. And, yeah. You know, there's a lot to consider. It's a very broad topic, but I'll try and focus it a little bit. But, you know, as I think, you know, Gunter and Scott both mentioned, you know, first thing, protect the people. You know, if we get that right, we can then look at everything else. So if we work on the basis that we've protected our people, and, you know, there's still lots of issues around protecting your people you have to deal with. And, you know, there are some elements of insurance there you have to deal with, but we'll park that to one side. You know, the primary focus is then on really, you know, protecting the project, the assets, and maintaining the insurance, making sure the insurance is valid and still in play, and they kind of go hand in hand together. We've talked about cessation of works. I think one sort of important distinction is, you know, what is cessation of works? You know, when we look at it, it's either a partial or full suspension of the works. You know, it doesn't have to be, some people consider it as like a full shutdown site. That, you know, I don't think we have any site that's been fully shut down. But they've all, you know, sites are slowed down to various extents. I think one point to realize is that, you know, this is quite uncommon in terms of cessation of works. You know, 18 years, I think I've done it once in my, you know, career, in terms of working on a project that's had to be suspended. You know, so you've got, you know, I'm pretty sure pretty much every one of Scott's clients has got a project that's suspended. But not just one project, it's probably impacting all of their projects. So it's going to have this global effect to your portfolio of projects that needs to be managed. And you layer that on top of, especially in the case of Bechtel, we've, you know, all our projects are different. You know, we don't just do roads, we do, you know, oil and gas, we do mining metals, we've got a broad spectrum. So they each have different risks that need to be managed. And going back to my sort of, you know, first point, you know, how do you protect the asset? You know, first one is security. You need to keep it secure to stop it, you know, vandalism or the like happening. But then you've got to focus on the specific risks of that that asset, and that kind of fire or flood exposure, whatever it may be, and make sure you protect that asset. And both insurers and brokers have produced a lot of good information. And we worked actually with Zurich, and use their sort of templates and information to make sure we're providing all of our sites. It's basically similar information so we could respond back to the insurance market with our response across our whole portfolio of projects. And that's quite critical to make sure we could keep the market abreast of basically what we were doing and making sure it was kind of a uniform decision across our portfolio, because in my view, you've got to make sure you're communicating well, so the best decisions are made, and also that, you know, you're traveling through the cessation of works path that we've not really gone through before. And as I think, you know, Scott mentioned, different policies with different clauses, but traditionally you'd probably see about a 60-day period where you're basically allowed a suspension of work. You know, some clients, I'm sure, some projects will be hitting that 60 days now. And this is kind of slightly uncharted territory. So we're going to have to work together as a you know, booker, underwriter, insured client to make this work. One thing just to add, I think it's, I didn't add it when Scott was talking about risk allocation. I mean, it's quite a hot topic. You know, we, at the conference we had earlier this year,
yeah,
and we talked about the World Economic Forum and risk allocation and infrastructure projects. You know, this, you can bet this is going to be at the top of the list on every contract negotiation we see going forward. And, you know, where does this risk sit is going to be an interesting one. Where is it fairly allocated? You know, it's going to be one of those topics we're going to be, I'm sure we'll be talking as a group, you know, over the next 2-3 years. But it's been interesting to see in terms of risk allocation where it's landed to, because it's such a big exposure. How do you allocate it appropriately?
Thank you very much, Paul. We got some really interesting questions coming in here. I think what we're going to do is I'm going to throw the next question at Joel, and then we've had all the panelists have had their input, and then I think we're going to start tackling some of these questions. Actually, we've got some good ones. Joel, what are the interesting to get the US perspective, obviously, which is very important to us all. Key risk management considerations for owners as the lockdown eases. I mean, that's a challenge for everyone. And the main pressure points and new risks, both human and physical. What's your view from over there?
Well, thanks for asking. I think, you know, my understanding, you know, and this is from the Associated General Contractors survey, that about 30%, they did an industry snapshot of contractors, had some type of shutdown, whether it was from a government agency, owner, whatever the reason, they had some delay or halt in work. So, you know, it isn't a complete shutdown, but, you know, when 30% of your, you know, contractors are ramping back up, there's going to be some pressures to make sure that we do it in an appropriate way and in a way that recognizes what is really, you know, not a new risk, but definitely a huge risk for our workforce. And is especially in the Americas, if you're looking, you know, at our news feeds, you're seeing, hey, second wave might be hitting. So people are coming in and out of work. So I participated in a RIMS call, Risk Management Society call for contractors. And there were a number of things that we talked about in terms of what do we need to do to safely bring back a job site. And I think, you know, first and foremost, from ERMI's perspective, the International Risk Management Institute, is protect lives and livelihoods. So it's what are the protocols for bringing back people to work safely. And that's, you know, obviously job site hygiene, signs and protocols, daily cleaning procedures, management of key trades and suppliers. Will masks be required? Can you get the appropriate masks and cleaning supplies? And even, you know, we talked about this on the RIMS call, but we had, you know, what is the appropriate number of porta potties? Maybe you guys call them loos over there. I'm not sure.
A lot,
but cleaning and procedures related to that and are going to be critical. And even such things as, can they share tools or how do they clean tools, and making sure that you have, you know, the appropriate distancing for workers. So that's, there's a number of solutions that can be implemented for that. But one of the most important things that I think about is job site communication and complying with federal regulations and even state and local regulations. So, you know, there's, in the U.S., it can be very confusing as to who's regulating this job site and issues right now. Is it OSHA? Is it the local municipality? Is it the state? Is it federal? So, preparing to understand that is very important. And, you know, you have to be prepared to follow the most restrictive if you want to be safe in that. So in addition to those challenges, I think there's, you know, having meetings with trade partners. Obviously, from this presentation, supply chain review is going to be critical as we start up, and really just, you know, customer meetings, you know, on, you know, making sure you understand that. I do think that with so many companies restarting at one time, the best approach is going to really look at it as a second opportunity to do a pre-construction planning initiative, right? And include the technologies and hygiene protocols that you're going to need to do this safely and protect worker safety. So, you know, just something as simple in the U.S. as something we call a worker safety huddle, you know, getting 20 people together and talking about a pre-lift safety thing can't be done in a COVID thing. So what technology are you going to employ to make sure you can do a safety meeting and get at the communications out there? You know, we talked about that when we were all together in Europe, but, you know, we recommend MindForge, but there's other technologies out there that can also fit that. So I think those are some of the things. I think the other thing is we really have to understand, you know, in the U.S., there's probably a raging battle over vertical versus horizontal exhaustion of limits. And, you know, like we said, you know, reviewing contracts to understand exposures. And, you know, the policies that are out there are written, but the cases are going to interpret how the coverages are. And there have been, as a trend, over 600 active litigation cases and 69 legislative bills in the U.S. That are changing the game on a state-by-state basis. So you have to have a way to track that. ERMI provides a lot of those resources to subscribers and even some free resources as to, you know, how to handle all of this. And, you know, please go to ERMI.com for the any free resources we can get to help you understand those exposures in the U.S. as they change. And we're always welcome for questions and comments on that in our at ERMI. So I think that really kind of covers the basics of being concerned on going back to work is protect workers, understand your contracts, work closely with your broker and your carriers to mitigate as we go back and try to go back work to work safely, and you know, be educated as to what are the exposures, what are the changing risks, and find resources that are unbiased to provide you sources of information on how to protect workers and how your coverage may be changing on case law.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Joel. Let's grab one of these questions here from Chris Leiter over there in Paris. Presuming you're still there, Chris. In the context of COVID-9 shutdown and later restart, what are the key coverage issues, challenges you anticipate may arise under CAR and DSU policies? What are the likely key areas of disagreement and dispute? I don't think we quite covered that. Stephen, you want to have a go at that?
Yeah, there is one issue where, on, for example, on PFI contracts, which were which were assigned during a period of soft market, as to in some of those, there is actually a requirement for you to take out communicable or notifiable diseases cover up to a certain figure. And there is a significant issue about whether going forward, come the next renewal, we'll actually be able to get that cover. And if so, whether it complies with the terms of that original contract. So that's going to be a challenge going forward. And there is going to be an issue about to what extent people are prepared to write communicable diseases cover other than COVID-19, because that may well be excluded. So that's one potential insurance challenge. I think that insurers, and maybe others can comment on this, are going to be wanting to know more about what people are doing to respond to the challenges in their day-to-day operation of sites as people come out of lockdown. So you may have reopened a site, but you may not have a sufficient stockpile of materials to be able to carry on if your suppliers are either insolvent or are themselves struggling in jurisdictions where lockdown is either present or has been reimposed.
Yeah.
And then the final difficulty, of course, would be if we had second spikes, or if you have to reclose because of something that you in your particular position have not done. So, for example, you have a meat storage facility that suddenly gets a new localized outbreak. How are you going to deal with the losses that arise from that?
Yeah. Okay. And then we got this other question here that maybe you can have a quick look at, Stephen, before I hand over to possibly Scott. To what extent will force majeure provisions in the construction contract come into play here? Namely, the contractor is due an extension of time, so they're not late and the DSU is not triggered. That's a tricky question, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw that come up. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me.
Well, Scott's put it down.
We know who to thank for that question because I saw his name above it, but I won't know publicly. So I think what was being proposed was, have we actually got a DSU claim if the contract has been allowed an extension of time and therefore the contract isn't late? But if I bring it back to a different scenario, because there are a number of force majeure provisions in contracts, and in many it would include floods, hurricanes and earthquakes. And the reality is, if the project was delayed because of... Could you still hear me, by the way? Because you froze.
Yeah.
You could, sorry. If a project was delayed and because of an earthquake, let's say, and the contractor was allowed an extension of time, then it would still be a valid DSU claim insofar as physical damage triggered what would be a standard DSU product. I think the big challenge with the FM clauses is typically they will only allow an extension of time. They won't cover cost. And that's where the contractors themselves are going to be suffering, because many of the employers will say, but the costs that are being incurred by the contractors is significant. And we know the margins are very small, you know, less than 5%.
Yeah. Okay. I think we thanks, Scott. Just losing you at the end there, but just about covered it all, I think. Paul, if I can reintroduce you into the conversation. What coverage do contractors and owners need in the new environment? And is the market actually going to be able to react? That's a big question. I think that kind of merges in with what is going to happen with capacity and pricing and terms and conditions, further hardening looking forward. But if we start with what do you need and will it be available, then we can go into the sort of broader conversation about the state of the market and where we expect it to go, I think. Paul?
Yeah, I think there's no magic COVID insurance available at the moment, I can safely say. But I think there's two focuses is, you know, the builder's risk, what are the impacts on that for the moment? And, you know, we're starting to see COVID exclusions, widespread insurers mandating that. So I expect, all new policies will have a new exclusion clause in there. In fact, I've seen some insurers have tried to put that in, you know, midterm winter policy extensions and the like. So I can see that there will be some impacts the builder's risk wording. We'll see what the lessons learned and the impacts are apart from the insurers. I'm sure they'll try and tighten up some of the language in the policies. But I think in terms of I think everybody gets asked, what is the magic sort of insurance that's going to cover COVID? You know, I'm sure every insurance manager's management team have asked them that. And if you sort of boil down what it would cover, you know, delay costs, clean up, extra expense, in, if we look at other risks that have taken us, let's call it a semi-similar route, let's call it, you know, the Nat Cat exposure, your wind, your flood, you know, there's been some sort of cover provided for on a sort of limited basis, you know, a set limit. That would be ideal, and you know, of course there'd be bars for that insurance. I think the big problem here is the global nature of this and the fact it affects everybody. Every construction site's been affected by this nearly. So I get to the point that, you know, is it actually insurable? It's just so widespread. And yeah, I think time will tell as we go through this phase. I don't necessarily think insurance is going to be where we're going to look to. I think as both Joel and Scott touched on, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's all going to be about risk allocation in the prime contract between the owner and the contractor, and how that's dealt with fairly, whether that's extension of time plus costs. That will be a key negotiating point to be negotiated on all new contracts.
Yeah, so really it's a contract risk management question rather than an insurance capacity and pricing and terms and conditions question, really.
Yeah, and I think that until, and I don't think there will be an insurance solution, but if, you know, but until there is any form of insurance solution, it's going to have to be dealt with contractually. And you're going to have two parties either side who have both been told by probably their leadership team, you know, don't accept any COVID risk. So I can see some very long, drawn-out contract negotiations coming in front of us.
That'd be fun. Joel, you obviously see exactly the same thing over the US, I think, that you've hinted at it earlier, yeah?
Yeah, I really do think that, you know, especially insurance is not designed to cover this type of loss, right? It is not the way I believe that it will go. I completely agree with what has been said previously, that there's going to be some long drawn out contract reviews, and you know, paying attention to that and understanding how to mitigate the loss, prevent the loss, and deal with the loss, and is going to be important. You know, there potentially are some solutions being proposed, or you know, captives for some types of risk, but I don't think that there's going to be a wholesale, you know, solution introduced anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. We've got a couple more interesting questions arrived in on the Q&A. Before we tackle them, I'll just ask you, Scott, just generally speaking, what can risk managers expect from the market? Is it going to harden horrendously? And which will be the most affected areas and lines?
Okay. Sorry, I've just moved. So.
All right.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can see you in the gym there, yeah.
If I had a crystal ball,
yeah,
I would be holding it up right now, but I don't. So, but if we go through the individual classes, probably starting with the D&O market, I think COVID has come at a very bad time. We saw that the D&O market was already going through a major correction. Mm-hmm. That started at the end of 2019. And as we've entered this phase, you know, the D&O market is focused heavily on balance sheet. They're focused on share price. And one of the reasons the D&O market suffered was because of the shareholder class actions, particularly in the US and Australia. Mm. And that's made those renewals much, much tougher. So I think it's just come at a really bad time for D&O. When it comes to professional indemnity, again, we started to see that market correct in 2018, and that's followed through. For me, I'm not so worried about direct implications of COVID. You know, we're still seeing the hangovers from cladding issues, for example. I mean, everyone in the world is aware of the unfortunate events at Grenfell, and we are still seeing cladding claims now. So that market has got its own problems outside of what's going on in COVID.
Yeah.
If we talk about the traditional construction or risk market, I think the marketplace for annuals is steady insofar as it's rated on the claims experience. What worries me a little bit more is the market for single projects. And there, we'd already started to see a deselection of certain risk types. Yeah, if you've got a nice high-rise office building in Paris, you're not going to have any problems. If you've got a hydroelectric power station at the moment with Deland Startup,
we've basically seen markets shy away from that type of risk. So you're going to see huge spreads in pricing the more complicated the risk is. When we talk to our sister company in Guy Carpenter, we understand the treaty renewal seasons are starting to become very tough. You can see cat prices going up significantly. But one of the things that I think is unfortunate, you know, I was hoping the construction market was going to start rebuilding next year. But if you have new capital or spare capital, are you going to put that into the construction market that's a medium to long-term risk? Or are you going to nip in and nip out of the P&C market where you've got 12-month periods? Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the challenge for construction. The market's not going to recover for some time, and the hard market's going to be here for a while.
Yeah, pure capacity question. Yeah, good point. Thank you very much, Scott. Okay, got a quick question before I go on to the last one. Someone's asked here, to what extent could social distancing rules really be realistically enforced on sites? And what sort of risks does this prevent owners going down the line? It's a very practical but actually really important question. Who wants to have a go at that one? Nobody. Then I shall pick somebody. Paul, you've got sites. I mean, how do you make sure these things are complied with?
You've unfortunately just got to, you know, and it involves more supervision on site to make sure it's complied with. It's training. It's more health and safety professionals with more supervision. You know, from the outset, I think we've all said that, you know, employee or personnel safety is key. You know, if we can't get that right, we can't get back to work. So it's kind of one of our, from a better point of view, it's one of our main principles. So we've got to get it right. And, you know, especially in a number of jurisdictions, if you don't get it right, you know, you'll get shut down pretty quickly. So it's not optional, really.
Okay, thanks. Joel, quick question point from you.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give a shout out to, you know, one of the people I did a podcast with, you know, which is Gary Kaplan, who I see as a, you know, a leader in the Americas in the construction industry, who talks about companies that are employing technology to assist in this. And there are technologies out there that can, you know the distance between you and another object, right? The wearable technologies. And we may, you know, we as an industry may need to look at employing some of those technologies, because not only does it help prevent those types of things, like keep you in a safe range or alert you when you're in a dangerous range, but it also can track, you know, contact. So in the event that somebody on a job site has COVID-19, you could quickly identify who potentially has been impacted, notify them and isolate them to keep the work going smoothly for the rest of the people, right? So, you know, there are some, we did a podcast on it. It is interesting that, you know, there's a lot of companies like AXA globally and others. Zurich, I think, is another company that is working on some of these technologies and advocating for them from a risk management standpoint that could be helpful in keeping people safe.
Yeah, thanks, Joel. That's a good point to finish up there, actually. I think we're just about to switch off. We're going to answer, we have questions. We'll try and provide some answers through our normal channels, actually, so that everybody's question gets answered. The idea of actually maybe having some kind of taser system installed within us all. So if you get under 2 meters from somebody, you get an electric shock. That's going a bit 1984 for those of you old enough to remember. But hey, it's a new world, isn't it? Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for your contribution today. I really enjoyed the conversation. Gunther, thanks so much for your opening presentation. Paul, brilliant to get the customer's perspective as ever. Thanks a lot. Joel from the US, awesome. Thank you. Stephen, brilliant as usual. Thank you. And Scott, really interesting stuff. We've got an interesting period ahead of us. I hope we'll be able to join again our normal physical conference as we do every year as soon as this is all over. But otherwise, let's continue in this manner. Thank you very much, everybody, and see you soon. Thank you.
Yeah.
you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Be well. Thanks for putting this together.